Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. I'm glad you could join us once again for Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. It's going to be a good show today. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hope you're up for it. It's another podcast. You know, the great thing about podcasting is I record it live. It gets recorded, and you listen to it later as opposed to live. I don't know. It just came to me. Anyway, we're on podcast number, let's see, number 23. Last week I said it was number 21. It was really number 22. What do I know? Anyway, it really is podcast number 23 for February 11th, 2006. And you know, I'm still not used to it being 2006. I don't know what it is. Last night I actually saw a little bit of 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I remember seeing that in the theater when I was like 13 years old. Yeah, man. 1968. Pretty weird. 2001, I mean, that seemed like it was forever away. I mean, the 21st century. I used to watch a show on TV with Walter Cronkite called The 21st Century, and I thought, wow, man, that's so far away. Here we are in 2006. I mean, we're like well into the 21st century now, and you know, it's like, here we are. So, what are you going to do? Anyway, 2006, yes indeed, that's what it is, and we're going to have a podcast today. Let's see what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about some of the things that I blogged about this week. You know, it's kind of a weird week because I didn't do a lot of blogging. Kind of a little here, a little there, and then all of a sudden, right at the end of the week, boom, da-da-boom, da-da-boom, I blogged a whole lot of things. So, you know, I guess maybe it was kind of an off week in the computer world, you know, just not a lot going on. But I did find a few little tidbits. Speaking of tidbits, why bring home the bacon when you can print it? Now, there's a blog entry for you. That'll get your attention. And as I say in the blog, you know, this is weird. It's truly weird. You know, inkjet printers are cool, okay? All right, they're cool. They're inexpensive. They print things. You guessed that, didn't you? But these guys at the Medical University of South Carolina and Clemson are printing with biomaterials. They're taking a special inkjet printer. They're filling the cartridges with biomaterials. Now, that sounds real cool, but basically what we're talking about is like organic meat-like stuff, you know, kind of artificial meat. Yeah. And then they're printing with this stuff in a thermoreversible gel and three-dimensional structures so that they can print things like capillaries and... That's weird. I don't know. So the guy writing the article said, well, you know, why not print simpler things like bacon? So you could print yourself some bacon, and then you could fry it, and you'd have bacon that you printed from biomaterial. Ugh. So, there you go. Now, the goal, according to their story here, is that they're eventually going to be able to print things with this biomaterial in shapes that they desire, three-dimensional shapes, and be able to replace things like veins and capillaries and muscle tissue and stuff in your body. You know, I just don't think I'm really ready to have an organ of my body replaced from an HP DeskJet. I just don't think so. No. So, moving on. All right, new battery technology. This looks really cool. MIT is making a breakthrough in a new type of battery. Now, this battery is a really cool special battery. It uses nanotube structures. It improves on energy storage, and it's called an ultracapacitor. That sounds kind of cool anyway. The ultracapacitor. Uh-huh. Capacitors store energy as an electrical field, and that makes them more efficient than standard batteries, which get their energy from chemical reactions. And you ever seen a battery go bad and kind of spew goo all over it? Blech. Anyway, ultracapacitors are capacitor-based storage cells that provide quick, massive bursts of instant energy. They're sometimes used in fuel cell vehicles to provide an extra burst for accelerating into traffic and climbing hills. Now, the ultracapacitors that we're talking about need to be much larger than batteries to hold the same charge. And this invention would increase the storage capacity of existing commercial ultracapacitors by storing electrical fields at the atomic level. That sounds really cool. But the upshot of all of this is that this new battery technology is going to let them come up with longer-lasting batteries that can retain their charge for longer. And, you know, we're using more batteries than ever before. I mean, we're doing a podcast right now. People with iPods, man, they are burning through those batteries. So longer life and more energy, it's a good thing. So there you go, new battery technology. Now, you know that the doctor is all about freeware. I like utilities, I like freeware, I like cool things, okay? And finding them can be a challenge. You know, I get a lot of leads from different places, and I hit places here and there, and I'll find stuff that's kind of cool. And sometimes somebody will come and say, hey, Dr. Bill, I found this really cool utility. And they'll email me, or they'll tell me. I had a guy at work tell me about, matter of fact, the Geek Software of the Week. When we get to that, I'll talk about that. Guy at work shared that with me. So, you know, I'm finding a lot of utilities and a lot of freeware from a lot of sources. Well, here's a site that I just mentioned in the blog very briefly that daily, at least theoretically, daily, they're supposed to be sharing freeware and shareware. That's the whole purpose of the blog. And I thought it was cool that they were using WordPress as their blog engine. Hey, you know, because I use WordPress for mine. It's really cool software. Anyway, the site is free, download freeware and shareware software, the blog. And the last time, they're supposed to post it daily because it says daily news for freeware and shareware. The last time they posted was February 10th, and, you know, today's the 11th. Well, that's not so bad. I mean, it's a day. I guess I should cut them some slack. Okay. But anyway, the last thing they posted is one called Hyperspace Invader 2.21. Explore hyperspace as you save humanity in this brilliant 3D shooter. And it's, of course, shareware, and you can get it, you know, downloaded. So that's one of the things that they talk about. They have IntelliLogin, which is a web login form filler. They have SEO Note, one of the best personal and business information managers. So, you know, there's just all kinds of different things. Some of them are games. Some of them are utilities. Most all of them that I'm seeing are shareware. I don't see that many freewares. I kind of like freeware myself, you know. Paying nothing for very cool software just feels really good. I like it. Anyway, so I put it there. It's a link. You can check it out. It's mgmq.com. So there you go. A link to a possible source for freeware and shareware. I can't attest to the quality of the freeware and shareware there, but hey, it's another source, and I'm always looking for sources. So speaking of which, if you have some really, really cool utility that is free particularly or open source and you've heard about it and you go, man, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard of, tell me about it. Come on, cut the doctor some slack. Send me an email. Dr. Bill, D-R-B-I-L-L, Dr. Bill at thecomputercurmudgeon.com. That's thecomputercurmudgeon.com. Notice how I spell that by its syllables. You know, go through the syllables. thecomputercurmudgeon.com. It's just one of those English things, you know, spreading it out, you know, breaking it up by syllables. Yeah. Anyway, here's a little warning for you, those of you that like these kinds of things. Now, let me give you my take on some of these kinds of things. I don't like toolbars that you can install in browsers because every one of them that I've seen have some issue. Either it's spyware or it's tracking your movements. I mean, they don't give you these toolbars just out of the absolute goodness of their heart. There's always something going on. So I don't like those kinds of things, okay? I'm always very dubious about these cutesy toolbars, Yahoo toolbar and Google toolbar and all these kinds of things. I just don't trust them, so I don't use them. And, you know, I don't get viruses, so there you go. Have I ever lost a computer due to a virus? No. Have I ever lost a computer due to spyware? No. Have I ever had a computer completely crash and freak out on me and lose all my data? No. No, because I practice safe computing, okay? And one of the ways to do that is to avoid all these weird, whatever they are, toolbars that don't really accomplish a whole lot except open your system up. Well, here's one for you, the Google Desktop. You know, Google was pushing their Google Desktop. You can use it to search everything on your computer with a special built-in search engine. Well, guess what? Has a new feature that opens up your computer to the net. Bad news. The Electronic Frontier Foundation said on February 9th that there is a serious, serious privacy and security risk because of the way a user's data is stored on Google's servers. Now check this out. They scan and index your data on your computer. They store it on their servers. Warning, warning, Will Robinson. That's bad. Because now they have your data. Did they tell you that they were going to keep your data on their servers? Oh, I don't think so. Anyway, the new Share Across Computers feature stores web browsing history, Microsoft Office documents, PDF, and text files on Google servers to allow users to run remote searches from multiple computers, which sounds, okay, kind of cool. You know, use a computer at work, use a computer at home. You want to have access to searching those same documents, so they store it on their servers. But if a hacker could intercept and hack that, guess what? Your Word documents, your Excel spreadsheets, your financial records, your little text documents that have all your little special passwords for all the websites you go to. Yes, I know you do that. Yes, I do. That's not a very smart idea anyway. But people do it, and it's on their computer, and you can imagine if the hacker could get in and get all that, dude, you're done. Send your saddle home, okay? So, bad news on the Google Desktop front. Will Google fix it? Probably. They'll probably come out with, oh, wait a minute. We fixed it. Uh-huh. We'll see. All right, I mentioned the Geek Software of the Week. Let's go into it. This is one that Scott Sawyer at work, I work at the Center for Creative Leadership, and Scott's one of the guys in the systems group, and he said, hey, dude, I have some software for you. I was like, all right, share. I'm all about free software. And I asked him, first thing I asked him, is it free? He says, you know it. I said, okay, let me see it. And it is so cool because everybody needs a good CD burner. Now you say, I got one in my laptop or in my computer. No. I'm not talking about the device. I'm talking about the software to run the burner, right? CD burner software. Now, here's the reason why. Every single one of you listening to the sound of the dulcet tones of my voice need to go out and try Linux. Okay? You need to do it. Because we need to free you from the worldwide manipulation, monopolistic domination. That's what happens when you run the two words together, monopolistic domination to manipulation. Anyway, we need to free you from Microsoft's evil influence. We need to free you from that, okay? So in order to do that, you need to try Linux. Now, the best way to try Linux, well, there's actually a lot of ways to try Linux, but one of the best ways to try Linux is to download an ISO file extension, an ISO of a Linux distribution and either install it on a computer, and I know a lot of you go, no! Okay, calm down. We won't touch your precious computer. What we'll do is you can download an ISO of a live CD version of Linux, like, for instance, Nopix, okay? Nopix runs right off the CD, doesn't touch your hard drive, so you're good to go. It doesn't touch your data. You can try Linux. You can see what it's all about. But in order to do that, you have to download an ISO. okay? And you have to burn it to a CD. You say, well, no big deal. All I'll do is download the ISO and then just drag and drop it right over and copy it right to that CD. Wrong. Oh, man, I don't know how many people I've run across that have actually thought that's what you do. Now, if you have something like Roxio Drag and Drop installed, that might actually work, although it would work because Roxio is going, dude, you're such an idiot. I'm going to make sure you do it right, okay? In most cases, if you just drag and drop an ISO to a CD, you're just going to copy the file to the CD, and it's not going to boot. It's not going to run, and you're going to go, man, this Linux stuff is terrible. And you're going to get the impression that it was Linux that was stupid instead of you, okay? I'm sorry, you know, merely for comic effect, I really wouldn't call you stupid, no. You know, Linux challenged maybe, but not stupid. Okay, here's the thing. You need software that will take the ISO and properly burn the CD. Now, I mentioned Roxio. Roxio cost money. Dollars. It actually cost enough that you could probably fill up your car, maybe twice? So, maybe even three times. So, there's things you could do with that money other than buy Roxio. Same thing with Nero. Now, here's the thing. I really like Nero, originally. But Nero has gotten more and more and more bloated. You're saying, what is Nero? Nero burning ROM. Get it? It's a little pun kind of thing. Nero fiddled while Rome burned. Well, Nero burning ROM is the name of the software by Nero Software. And I think they're in Germany. But at any rate, they came up with this cool CD burning software, but then they started adding feature after feature after feature after feature, stuff I don't care anything about that I never use. Hear me, Nero? Never use. And yet their software keeps getting more and more and more bloated and more and more and more expensive. Now, you know, I bought it a long time ago, and I've been able to get updates fairly inexpensively. And yes, I still have it. But I've often said if there was just a program that all it did was burn a CD, take an ISO, burn a CD, that would be great. Well, finally, we've got it. It's called Express Burn, and it is freeware. Hallelujah. So you can download it, you can install it, and you've got a way to burn your ISO. So go to Nopix, download the ISO, download this free CD burning software, burn a Nopix CD, try it, and you will like it, I guarantee it. Nopix is just really cool because you can use it to pull files off of a system that's been totally hosed. I've done that so many times, can't count, but it's great stuff. And you get to see Linux and the interface and kind of how it works and go, you know, that's not so bad. And then maybe you'll be open to leaving the evil empire. There you go. So, Geek Software of the Week is Express Burn. Get it. What it does, here are the features. It writes both data CD for files and audio CDs. Cool. It records CD recordable, that's CDR, and CD re-recordable, CDRW disk. It supports the Joliet and the CDA formats. The data CDs support multi-level folders and long file names. Audio CDs are recorded with direct digital recording, so perfect audio quality is maintained. Oh yeah. For audio CDs, it supports WAV, MP3, WMA, AU, AIFF, RA, OGG, FLAC, ACK, that's AAC, and a number of other audio file formats. Data CDs are fully ISO compliant with Joliet extension and includes command line operation for automation integration with other programs. Hey, that's pretty cool. And it has a simple, easy-to-use interface for day-to-day operation. And see, I like it. It's light. It's small. It just does what it's supposed to do. And it has other programs that you can choose to install when you actually download the freeware version, which, by the way, I will mention, be sure that you download the freeware version. There is a version you can pay for, and if you want to, that's fine. I mean, support them, that's great. But if you just want the freeware version, get that one, download it. It'll say, do you want this? Oh, yeah, and by the way, do you want this? I didn't want all their long list of stuff that they had, but there was one thing that was a converter that converted one type of file to another type of file. For instance, an MP3 over to a WAV, or a WAV to an MP3, or MP3 to an OGG, or, you know, all these different formats. It will actually swap the formats by doing the file conversion for you. And I thought that was pretty cool. That was another little free one. And that was actually something that I'd planned on looking on. So now I've got it. It's all coming from the same company, which is NCH Swift Sound. And they've got a cute little website, so check it out. It's nch.com.au, so they're Aussies. They're in Australia. Good day, mate. I don't do a very good Australian accent, so, you know, what are you going to do? Anyway, so, get it. It's good. All right. Good recommendation there, Dr. Bill. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. We're looking at another interesting technology. And for this, I've got to set it up. Yes, indeed. Many, many years ago, at the dawn of civilization, there were computers. And these computers were not all that powerful, but they were, for their day, awesome. These particular computers were called workstations, and they ran Unix, and they ran VMS. I know a lot of you probably going, Vahana? VMS. It was made by Digital Equipment Corporation. Yes, I know, they're long since have been absorbed by Compaq, which has been absorbed by HP. So they're kind of several layers down into the archaeological digging of ancient computer history. But I used to be a big, big digital computer wonk. I mean, man, I was decked, tried and true. I was, you know, chairman of my local DECUS chapter. That was the Digital Equipment Computer User Society. I went to the DECUS conventions like in Las Vegas. Oh, man, I was into DEC computing. I had an article published in DEC Professional Magazine. Oh, man. We're talking ancient history. And I even, check this out, people. Listen, I even have a Charlie Matco coffee cup. Dude. Now, if you're not a DEC professional and you don't go back to those ancient days of yore in the DEC computing world, you probably don't even know what a Charlie Matco coffee cup means. So I'll tell you. What it is, Charlie Matco was kind of like the DEC equivalent of Spencer Catt. You know, in eWeek magazine, they have Spencer Catt, and he's supposed to be a character that goes around looking for rumors and all this kind of stuff and printing all the rumors that are fit to print in the back column of eWeek magazine. Well, way back in the 80s, when I was super DEC professional dude. Matter of fact, my nickname was the Vax Man, because the Vax computer, you see, was the pinnacle of digital equipment computers. Yes, indeed, the Vax. I remember it well. The 11750, the 11780, the 11785. Oh, yeah. I've even worked on a DEC System 20. Now, that takes you back. Wow, that was a long time ago. Anyway, point being, I was the Vax Man. And Charlie Matco was the rumor monger guy for DEC Professional Magazine. Okay? Now, here's how it worked. If you had a really cool rumor that you had heard, you're privy to some, you know, secret inside DEC stuff, then you write Charlie Matco and you tell him what it is. And if he used it in his column, he sent you a Charlie Matco coffee cup. And these Charlie Matco coffee cups were like trophies. They were like, if you had one, you must have been an insider to get something that even Charlie Matco didn't know that he used in his column. It was just really cool to have a Charlie Matco coffee cup. And I got one. I tried for a long time to come up with something that Charlie didn't already know. And I didn't. But then one day, I heard a rumor, and I was not under an NDA. Don't now see a lot of you out there going, you were probably under NDA and you leaked it. No, I wasn't under an NDA. So, okay, yeah, I always honor those. All right, but I heard that SAS, you know, right there in Cary, North Carolina, was going to release something special for the DEC computer. And so I sent that to Charlie Matco, and he goes, ooh, I didn't know that. And he used it in his column. And mentioned my name. And I got a Charlie Matco coffee cup. So, score. Okay. Here's the thing. I'm telling you all that to tell you that I used to work with digital computers. Boy, that was a long story to tell you that I used to work with digital computers. Anyway, and I worked at Sibagagi, which was a big, you know, international chemical company. For those of you who don't like chemical companies, I'm sorry. It paid the bills, okay? Anyway, so I worked there. And we had a lot of cool computers, including Alpha-based. The digital Alpha chip was one of the coolest chips of its day. Alpha-based workstation came in one day. And this thing was running VMS. At that time, it had changed its name to OpenVMS. And it was running X Windows. Now, that's I'm finally getting to what I was really going to talk about. X Windows. Okay, you say, what's X Windows? X Windows is a standard that came out of the Unix world, brought over into OpenVMS from the Unix world, and it was a display technology. Actually, Linux display technologies like KDE and GNOME are based on X, okay? The X11 protocol. Now, X technology allows you to display on the screen a screen from another computer. And this is what was so cool. You could be running a session on a VAX, large VAX computer, and displaying it on your workstation, and it looked like it was just running right there on your workstation. Now, the beauty of that was is you could harness this huge power of this, you know, mid-frame computer and display it on your little workstation. And that was very cool. That was kind of the first pass, you might say, at terminal server kind of computing. And, of course, terminals are not a new thing. Matter of fact, back in the day, that's what we used for the VAX, is we just had a plain old CRT terminal, and it was just displaying your session that was running on the VAX. Well, the thing was, is once personal computers came along and you could display what was actually happening on your personal computer on your own screen, and terminals kind of started fading out. But then somebody said, wait a minute, you know, that big mainframe type computer has still got a lot of power. It would be nice to have sessions that would go into that and display the screen locally, and that's what X was all about. Now, the weird thing, like I mentioned in the blog, the weird thing is about X11, X Windows computing is it was a client-server computing system, but I was used to thinking of the server as the mainframe, the client as the local computer. That just made sense to me. But in the X world, it was reversed. The server for X Windows was the workstation you were running on because it was serving up the X Window environment. The client that you were running was on the server, the mainframe. So you were always having to think in reversed, you know, thinking, which I can do. A lot of people say I do it a lot. But it just was weird. I kept thinking, wait a minute, it should be the other way around. So I mentioned that because those of you that work with it probably get a chuckle out of me mentioning that because I'm sure everybody's had the same issue. But at any rate, the problem with X Windows was, it was very cool that it worked, but it was very slow. The screen paints would go, and there were really three reasons for that. One is, our LANs were not very fast. You know, back then, if you had an 8 meg throughput on your LAN, which was rare, you probably only had 6 meg throughput, you know, that was considered good. Well, these days, you go to the store and buy an Ethernet card, it's a 10/100. In other words, 10 megabit slash 100 megabit. If you got a 100 megabit switch that you're connected to with your 100 megabit card, you got 100 megabit throughput. Now, think about that. That's orders of magnitude faster than those LANs we had back in the day. Okay? Now we're getting gigabit LANs. 1 gig throughput. Dude. That's per second, okay? So that helps, obviously, speed things up, okay? The other thing was, X Windows, as a protocol, was a huge protocol. It wasn't very efficient. And so it also contributed to the slowness. So I say all of that. I set all that up to say that now they've come up with a new version of X, new X, called NX. Wow, isn't that smart? So NX is a new version of this protocol. And what they've done is they've taken the X protocol and they've shrunk it down, made it much smaller. And because it's a smaller protocol, it will run much faster and it will run much faster even through a small pipe. In other words, where you don't have a whole lot of bandwidth. For instance, dial-up. Now, I know nobody uses dial-up anymore. What? Some of you out there say, wait a minute, I do? Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for you. Oh, well. Anyway, no. Hopefully, you're not using dial-up. But if you are, bless your darling heart. I'll pat you on your little head. You need broadband, dude. Anyway, for those that still have to use dial-up, this protocol actually will run and run very efficiently, and you'll get your screen paints very, very quickly. So NX, check it out. I've got a little article on it where I go back through memory lane like I just took you with what it's all about, and then I've got a link to an article in Linux Journal talking about the free NX, yes indeed, open source free NX protocol, and then there's a company called NoMachine. And NoMachine is developing NX, and they have a commercial version. And if you go check out their website, it's actually a pretty cool-looking little website. And they have some pictures of sessions of Linux running on Windows and Windows running on Linux in terms of sessions. And it's so fast, it looks like it's running locally. You can publish out applications. They have tools to manage the NX network. It reminds me a whole lot of Citrix. Citrix is a very cool technology, but it's totally Windows-based. I'm a Citrix consultant. I do a lot of, you know, stuff with Citrix, and I really like it. I think it's very cool technology, and the key to Citrix is their ICA protocol, which is a very tiny little protocol. And so they get really fast screen paints with their protocol, which is proprietary, on computers that have low bandwidth, like dial-up or whatever. Matter of fact, you can connect with a dial-up connection, run Citrix, and it looks like the application is running locally, which is why it is so cool. Now, you may say, well, I've never heard of Citrix, and I don't know anything about it. You know, what's all this about? Well, it is a very high-end, system, and you may not have heard about it. It's used mostly by corporations because it is so expensive. It's unbelievable. But Citrix, the company, which is based in Florida, came out with a more generally available commercial version, and they decided to call it GoToMyPC. Yeah, see, some of you actually use GoToMyPC and didn't even know that GoToMyPC was a company that was under the Citrix banner, if you will. And so they're using that kind of technology to do GoToMyPC. And those of you that have oohed and aahed over GoToMyPC and said, wow, isn't it cool that I can run a PC session over the internet and see it displayed, and it's just like I'm sitting at home? Now you know what client-server computing like that is like and why NX is so cool. You're going to be seeing more of NX, I guarantee you. Going to be good stuff. Oh, man, I am running over time so bad. I'm sorry. It's supposed to be a 30-minute podcast. It's 33 minutes and 35, 36, 37. I won't do a countdown. Anyway, point being, we're just about out of time. So I guess we'd better just roll on out of here. I hope you enjoyed the podcast this week. If you didn't, don't tell me about it. I don't want to know. But if you did, let me know. Dr. Bill at thecomputercurmudgeon.com. I want to hear from you. Let me know you're out there. Well, till next week, the doctor is out.